Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We are back. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Andre Holgate. Thank you so much for joining us on WILS. Well, right now, right there on the Wall Street Journal's most popular articles list today, one titled Counting on an Inheritance. Well, count again. The article outlining a situation baby boomers are now facing across the country that no big jackpot is coming from their parents when they do pass away. One of the sources in the piece is Holly Isdale, the founder of Pennsylvania-based Wealth Haven, a family advisory firm focusing on estate and financial planning and investment management. She's been advising wealthy families for over 20 years. You can find her online at wealthhaven.com. Holly, thank you for joining us on WILS this evening.
Thank you, Michael.
So tell me, just how much have the financial dynamics of inheritance money changed since 2008 and since this Great Recession? How is that impacting the inheritance baby boomers were hoping to cash in on?
I think it's been significant because, you know, up until maybe the 2008 downturn, a lot of boomers didn't think it was a nice to have, not a need to have, if they inherited something for their parents. And in fact, maybe they were offering their parents, you know, spend it. I don't need it. What's happening now, though, is you've got more and more boomers realizing that the markets are not going to come back and their parents are living longer, and you're starting to see an increased compression on family dynamics of mom and dad need care. They may not want to spend it. The parents want to save something for inheritance. And at the same time, it's incredibly hard in your 50s or 60s to be asking your parents for money.
Now, when it comes to this inheritance money and watching it drain away, I mean, how much do things like long-term medical care, how much do those begin to kick in as a parent turns, let's say, 80 or 90 and continues to live on?
Well, it really depends, Michael, if you've bought a long-term care policy. And I think what many families are finding is even these long-term care policies that, by the way, you have to buy when you're in your 50s or 60s, don't contribute that much when it comes to the type of care that your parents are needing. An hour of a caregiver is $20 to $30 an hour with an agency involved. And many times these contracts only give you, you know, $20 or $30 a day. So it's helpful for a little bit of care, but if your parents are going into an assisted living center, the buy-in costs and the monthly fees for those, I think, are way beyond what many people ever expected they would be.
And how does that negotiate between the parents and their children? I mean, a parent is in their 80s or 90s. And the kids are, you know, they want to make sure the parent is taken care of, but they also are maybe hoping to save a little money along the way and leave some money behind. How do you manage that very uncomfortable situation?
I think for the most part, children are very comfortable making sure that their parents are taken care of. And what you often see the boomers starting to realize, though, is that there is not going to be much left over, so they are in turn adjusting their retirement plans. They're not necessarily going to have the same level of retirement that their parents had and trying to scale down accordingly. I think the biggest tension, Michael, comes when the children are not communicating, and often you find that one child tends to take the lead in working with the parents, understanding the finances, and it becomes critical to have good conversations among all the children. Otherwise, you end up with surprises and anger and miscommunications. There's also, you know, a lot of our parents are generation, you know, depression babies. They don't want to spend money, and it was a status symbol for them that they would leave an inheritance to their children, and they're reluctant to spend money that maybe they need to spend for their own care. So there's also that dynamic. At the same time, you're trying to get your parents to take care of themselves rather than do without.
I'm talking to Holly Isdale. She's the founder of Wealth Haven, a family advisory firm focusing on estate and financial planning and investment management. Find her online at wealthhaven.com. So you're actually saying that your experience is that many times it's these parents, these depression-era parents, that are trying to leave as much of an inheritance behind, and the children need to maybe prod them to make sure that they're taking care of themselves. Now, when it comes to the actual transparency, do parents always want their children to know exactly how much inheritance money is there, or is there sometimes an issue there also?
Oh, absolutely not. Talking money is the ultimate taboo in our country. We talk and share about everything else except finances and costs. And I think, you know, parents, there's a whole dynamic, too, of having to explain to your parents that maybe you haven't saved as much for retirement the feeling that you are being held accountable for expenditures that you might have made when you had a job or had more money saved, or just the realization that I think many boomers are coming to that they started saving too late and the markets are not going to be working in their favor over the next 10 years when they really need to be saving. So nobody likes to talk about money, and in fact, it's one of the hardest things I do with clients is that the parents don't know how to talk to the children. The children don't want to ask the parents, and you really have to get everybody in a room where there can be transparency and not a lot of retribution, and that's very hard for a lot of families.
Well, I mean, it basically, does the discussion have to come to the point where, look, we don't have insurance, they're going to be ongoing medical costs for the parents, and is it just a matter of sometimes facing that there will simply not be an inheritance left?
Exactly. And then I think the biggest issue, too, for baby boomers is to be realistic about how much they can afford to spend for their parents. There's this strong desire to make sure your parents are taken care of and give them everything they want. No one wants to pull mom out of the super nice rest home and put her in something a little less or have her come live with you and have to assume that care. But many times you have to be realistic about the cost of care on an ongoing basis and not raiding your own accounts. I do see stories a lot of, you know, the children that are taking out home loans or raiding their retirement accounts to take care of their parents' health care costs. And that's, you know, they don't have enough time to make that up.
I mean, is that it? Is that where the money goes? I mean, it's not really losses in the market necessarily or any kind of real estate deals that go bad in retirement. It's 9 times out of 10. Is it actually the medical costs? And is really the lesson here to make sure you have some form of insurance for that?
It is that, you know, the big catastrophic things tend to be the real estate deal that goes south or, you know, the home that we thought we were going to sell for a couple of $100,000 that's selling for 30% less. You see that in particular for people that had second homes in vacation areas that have been very hard hit. I think health insurance and health costs are tremendous. It's also the ongoing care. It's not so much mom and dad being in the hospital, because often there's insurance for that, but the insurance for the person that can come to the house to bathe them, to do the housekeeping, to, you know, that visiting nurse or visiting aide is expensive, and those costs can really escalate out of control.
What is the current status of the taxes that are involved in passing an inheritance to offsprings? I know it might be shifting at some point, but what is it now, and what concerns should people have who are facing?
It's our ever-shifting tax regime. If for this year only, you know, one-time sale, if you give away this year, you can give away up to $5,120,000 per person as a combined lifetime or estate gift. That number is going to go away at the end of the year if Congress doesn't act and revert back to the 2001 level of $1 million. So I've got a number of clients who are really focusing on wanting to give away assets to avoid the estate tax, which is currently federally at 35%. As of next year, it's expected to ratchet back to the 2001 rates of 55% federal. In addition, a number of states have state or inheritance level taxes, which can add to that 35% federal tax. So I've got a number of clients that are really caught between, I think I have excess assets, so I should give them away to my children, but I also don't want to ask for them back. No one wants to be holding your hand out to your child for a handout or for support. But this year, the majority of Americans don't have to worry about an estate tax, because a married couple who has done no prior gifting could give away up to $10 million and change without incurring a federal estate tax. That's all going to change next year if Congress doesn't act. The bigger concern for many of that I try and get across to my clients is the lapse of the Bush tax cuts next year, because we've been living in a world of 15% dividends and 15% capital gains taxes. Dividends are expected to go back up next year. The highest marginal tax rate will be 39.6%. There's a 3.8% surcharge. So you're looking at dividends going from 15% tax rate this year to 43.4% next year. And that's a huge hit in people's after-tax incomes. And so, again, there's no easy answer. There are a number of different issues to think about. And I think that's also where, you know, you can talk about buying an annuity, you can talk about long-term care. All of those are decisions, ideally, you made when you were in your 50s and were done long before mom's in her 80s and is now looking for coverage.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly, so are we in fact seeing a spike in inheritance giveaways this year?
A lot of families talking about it, a lot of trusts being created. I think you'll see a lot of the transfers happening over the next 6 months as families get closer to the election and realize that gridlock in Congress, despite anyone's promises that they're going to address it, and our own fiscal constraints may prevent, you know, extension of these estate tax exemption levels. So, yes, a lot of families are starting to really look at their estate plans and do a lot of gifting, structured gifts, setting up trusts, other strategies depending on the level of wealth.
One last thing. You say that typically with siblings there's one that takes the lead. I mean, is that on the whole a good idea? I mean, since you've got three, four siblings, everyone has a different view and a different opinion. Is it a good idea to simply have somebody kind of be the lead decider? And does it, if you kind of spread that responsibility out, does it only cause more infighting?
I always recommend to clients that for major decisions, like your end-of-life decisions, it's one person, not a committee. The de facto situation is that often there's one sibling who happens to live closer, who just is the one that goes over and takes care of the parents. So I think often having one voice or one decider makes the most sense. Getting the family around the table to talk about the issues and having the parents even say, I want, you know, your older brother to be the one who's making these decisions, or I've chosen your youngest sister to do it, is critical because that empowers the child. You still have all of the family issues. They never go away, sadly. You know, mom liked you best. But it is important that you have clarity and that the other siblings appreciate it. I think you get a lot of sibling strife and anger that comes up after a parent has died when they resent the fact that they were the one that always had to answer the phone calls, or they were the one that was carrying the burden, and the parent never acknowledged it and thanked them for it. Or more importantly, the estate doesn't give them a benefit, and you've got brothers or sisters who were never involved, you know, with their hands out looking for money, or worse, arguing with you about money that you spent to take care of your parents.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like you're actually better off having some background in family therapy rather than necessarily financial advisory.
Oh, my gosh. I sometimes feel that my college psychology courses were more important than some of my law school classes. But you're right. There's an awful lot of family psychology that goes into this. And clarity and being able to have honest discussions among family members is hard but critical.
Holly Isdale, founder of the Pennsylvania-based Wealth Haven. Find her online at wealthhaven.com. You can find the article on this interesting story at the Wall Street Journal website, one of the most popular articles listed today. Holly, thank you very much for joining us on WILS.
Thank you very much, Michael.
And we'll be right back to talk about fathers. Father's Day is coming up next Sunday. And while mothers are very important, fathers also have a role to play, and we'll talk about how that role is changing and some advice for fathers as they try to figure things out for themselves. That is next. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.